Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
President Trump made it clear the government will not go along with the woke agenda. Sadly, the gender radicals have intensified their attacks on our families. Would you sign the petition urging President Trump to stand strong in his resolution to stop the LGBTQ agenda in the government and in America? And please, consider a gift to keep AFA action in the fight. To thank you for that gift, we'll send you the DVD in his image. Visit AFAaction.net today. AFAaction.net.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is a Monday, and it is Monday, July 14th, already halfway through this month, and a lot of news to get to this morning. The first headline is this horrible attack at a Kentucky church that leaves two women killed, according to ABC News. Two women were shot and killed at a Kentucky church by a suspect who fled there after allegedly shooting a state trooper elsewhere, according to officials. A suspect allegedly shot a Kentucky state trooper near the Bluegrass Airport in Lexington, then fled to a church where the suspect shot four people before police shot and killed him, officials said at a Lexington Police Department press conference late Sunday afternoon. Two of the churchgoers, both women, were killed. The other two victims, both male, were taken to the hospital for treatment. One of them is in critical condition, while the other is stable, according to officials as of last night's press conference. And so please continue to be praying for not only the families of those who were shot and killed, but then also the full recovery of the other two victims. And of course, everyone involved at this church. And the suspect has later been identified as one of these Free Palestine Muslim converts, which raises, of course, the necessary political question, which says that this is not just about Israel versus Palestine. This is also, according to some online, which I think is a fair assessment, that there is intentional hostility as well toward Christians. So what do we make of all this? Let's go to our first guest, Mike Donnelly, no stranger to the program, who is an attorney and a great commentator and Christian, of course. And so, Mike, this is always a horrible situation when we have to wake up on a Monday morning and talk about more violence, church shootings, things of this nature. And it seems like these are getting progressively more common. What do you make of the identity of this shooter being among the Free Palestine violent actors?
Well, good morning, Jenna, and good morning to everyone listening. It is a tragedy, and our country's faced a number of tragedies over the recent weeks with flooding and shootings, and certainly praying for these those who are recovering and the families. And I think this points out the importance of Donald Trump's policies on getting control of the border and investigating people who are expressing sympathy for Muslim terrorism and organizations that support them, like Hamas and Hezbollah and this quote-unquote Free Palestine movement. People should be suspicious and be very careful. And a little church like this in Kentucky, I don't know what the connection between the church and this individual was, if there was a connection, but I think it behooves individuals to be cautious about security measures in their churches. I mean, even a little church like this in Kentucky, I can tell you on a Sunday morning, my church is a rather large-ish church, medium-sized church with anywhere from 500 to 1,000 people coming through on a Sunday. And we're pretty careful about locking doors, and we have security detail. And so, here we are having to talk about this. It's not the first time this has happened. It won't be the last time. But I think, you know, people who are listening who have responsibility to shepherd their flocks need to be thinking about security. It can happen in a little church like this and people like that. It can happen anywhere.
Yeah, really well said. And I think that it is wise advice to say to churches that we do have to take precautions. My home church in Florida, likewise, you know, is fairly large, multiple services, and we have several state troopers that are assigned and come, and I think they just volunteer their time, but you know, come and provide security as well as additional security. And I know that my home church in Colorado, there's a number that concealed carry even among the members. And, you know, it's unfortunate that we have to talk about those types of precautions. But in today's world, and especially with increasing hostility towards Christians and just an increasing, I think, total worldview difference between those on the left and those who are Christians, who and also the, you know, those who are on the right. There seems to be not just a philosophical or debatable difference, but increasingly a violent hostility. And so it would behoove churches, especially, to take those types of precautions. I mean, similarly, that we would take as individuals and families who need to protect those who dwell with us, we would take precautions to lock doors, have security measures, security cameras, you know, those types of things. And that's normal in a home environment. So why would it be any different for a church?
Well, it's true. It shouldn't be. But, you know, you've got these little churches and they don't have a lot of resources. And, you know, in some churches, you've got an aging population. I don't know anything about this church, really. But, you know, and you're in the middle of Kentucky somewhere, you don't expect something like this to happen. And that's the shock of it, I guess, pending details being released. But again, it shows what happens when you allow just anybody to come in and you have an open borders policy and people sneak in and then they're allowed to stay. And then you've got people on the Democrat side, especially, who are kicking and screaming against anyone being deported. And so, you know, as you line up these data points between the immigration policies of the previous administration and this so-called Free Palestine movement, you know, yes, we need to be for free speech. We need to allow people to express their political opinions. But when there's a connection between those political opinions and violence, people need to get involved, and law enforcement and the authorities need to be paying very close attention and probably need to do a better job of it. And, you know, that's one of the main purposes of government. In, you know, Romans 13, it talks about what the purpose of government is. It's to protect the innocent, to punish the evildoer, right? So let's not just, I mean, this evildoer is dead, was killed and received a just punishment, probably. But we should prevent these things from happening. And so I think, you know, people in authority who are listening need to be thinking about how they're going to do a better job of protecting the people in their community from this kind of violence.
Yeah, really well said. And this is why all of these policy issues matter and why the border security is necessarily not just a conservative issue. It's not just, you know, Republican versus Democrat. It's a Christian worldview issue, because we see in Scripture, as you rightly point out, Mike Donnelly, the function and the legitimacy of government as God intended. And when we look at things like the border, and then we look at how, you know, the left is reacting to the temporary detention center here in Florida, Alligator Alcatraz, and they're just so completely offended that this isn't the Four Seasons, as Governor DeSantis has rightly pointed out. He's like, this isn't the Four Seasons. We're not running a hotel. This is a migrant detention facility so that we can quickly process them and expeditiously remove them from the country. And yet Democrats, it seems like, and the left, and all those who share this, like, really antithetical worldview to what the Bible says for the institution of government, they have this view that somehow these most oftentimes violent illegals here deserve some kind of treatment that they wouldn't even provide to our own citizens. And it's completely backward. And so as we're seeing the Trump administration move forward with all of these border policies and all that, how important is this over the next, you know, 3 years or so of Trump's administration to get this right?
I think it's critical. And I think he's done a lot of things right. And I think he's got the right message. And I believe it's resonating with the American people. And attacks like this are only going to make people more resolved. I can tell you when I, you know, just as a regular citizen, and I see the demonstrations and I see the Democrats going to ICE facilities and trying to get in, and the way they treat law enforcement. Like, I want law enforcement to protect people's constitutional rights, too. You know, as an attorney, you know, everybody has the right to an attorney, and you know, we want to protect free speech, yes. But at the same time, we're talking about protecting people from people who have violent intentions, who are coming here, and they are taking advantage of every opportunity to do so, to do evil to our country. And so we need to, our government needs to intervene. It needs to have strong policies that protect us from enemies from within and enemies who want to come in here. And we know they do. I don't know anything about this shooter. They migrate here illegally. I don't know anything about the shooter. But there are people here who have done that. And the law enforcement authorities, you know, they're doing a good job. I mean, we have a huge country, Jenna. You know that. We have a huge country. And so we, the people, also need to step up. We need to protect ourselves, our families, as you pointed out, and those who have a responsibility and authority in communities, you know, whether it's a community of faith in a church or in a town or a village, they need to be taking action.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. And these are the types of conversations and the focus and the emphasis that the Trump administration should be having, and that we as Christians need to be having. And yet, in switching gears a little bit, we are so focused and talking about other things, especially over last week, that deal with the Jeffrey Epstein files and Pam Bondi and Dan Bongino. And it seems like this is almost just giving the left something to focus on and headlines instead of the priorities and responsibilities of government and the administration that we should be focused on. And that's not to say that, you know, Trump can't do both, and that, you know, Tom Homan, DHS, all this other, all of the other actors of the Trump administration aren't focused on the border. But where the media attention is really is a big deal. And so I want to ask you, just from the legal perspective, and then my next guest is going to talk a little more about the political side and, you know, some of this on that. But I saw an ex post from Glenn Beck that, in the midst of everybody asking, you know, what's going on with the Epstein files, obviously Pam Bondi, the AG, and Dan Bongino, the deputy director of the FBI, are at odds in terms of the process that should take place with the files, if they exist, what isn't public yet. We don't really know. We don't have clarity. We don't have transparency. That's the problem. Dan is threatened to resign over it. We're all kind of interested to see, is he going to be there at work today? What's kind of the scope of the situation? But Glenn Beck, in the midst of all this, Mike Donnelly, said that he is going to submit a FOIA request for the text messages, assuming that there are any that aren't, you know, deleted, or, you know, the part of the disappearing messages that is available in modern technology, for the conversations between Pam Bondi and Dan Bongino. Without necessarily even getting into the relevancy of any of that, are text messages overall in a context of government agents FOIA-able?
Absolutely. I mean, don't you remember the Peter Strzok and Lisa Page text messages from Operation Crossfire Hurricane, right? We got those because I believe it was FOIA, although maybe it's going back a ways. There may have been some other method, but I think it was part of an investigation. But yes, they can be accessed. They're government agency records, but there's a lot of exemptions that apply. And I would think in this situation, the agency's probably not going to be very quick to release them, you know, because it's an ongoing investigation. And that's one of the exemptions that the government has to say that, look, you know, yes, we will produce records, documents, and text messages are included in that, but there are exemptions, particularly as it relates to law enforcement, and particularly as it relates to ongoing investigations.
Yeah, and I that's a blast from, you know, a million news cycles ago of the Lisa Page Peter Strzok issue. But even, you know, looking at some of the most recent investigations and some of the congressional hearings, I mean, there's text messages included all the time. It's really no different in terms of an electronic communication than an email. And of course, we know that, you know, those are FOIA-able. It's just kind of more of an instant email, and it may be a different type of an app than an email application. It's a text application, but the text in terms of being a government transmission remains the same in terms of that identity. So if Glenn Beck or, you know, whoever ends up going after these text messages, if they do, and the government seeks this type of exception, doesn't that just play into this whole problem right now of transparency related to this entire issue? I mean, I personally think that the whole thing could have been handled so much better, and the PR around this should have been handled better, especially, I mean, the merit of it should have been handled better, but just simply the PR. I mean, this is just giving the view that the Trump administration is not being as transparent as he promised.
Well, of course, the media is going to take whatever angle they can and go against the administration. You know, I don't know if people saw Donald Trump's message recently. He posted on X. He supports Pam Bondi. I saw a report that he's talked to Dan Bongino today. You know, we have really big problems in our country. And I'm not saying that transparency at the FBI is not one of them, but we need to have some perspective here. Jeffrey Epstein was convicted, pled guilty in 2007 or 8 to these crimes, which happened in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s. And there are allegedly some that happened later. He's been sued civilly by alleged victims. Then he was arrested after they reopened this investigation going back decades. I'm not saying that there shouldn't be transparency or that people shouldn't be looking into this, but I think we need to have some perspective here. There's wars happening around the world. We have a country that's $37 trillion in debt. We have a federal government that is out of control. And you've got a president who's put together a team, which includes Pam Bondi and Dan Bongino, to solve real problems. And while this may be an important one, I think we need to let things develop a little bit here. So I don't want to speculate on, you know, any of that. But other than to say, I have confidence in President Trump. If he has confidence in Pam Bondi, and so do I.
And Mike Donnelly, last question for you before I let you go, and always appreciate having you on the program. From just a purely legal perspective, I mean, as you mentioned, this has gone through a lot of court hearings. There's a lot of court involvement with the case file and the documents that at least exist that haven't yet been released. And there's an entire repository that has been released and as of a long time ago. But wouldn't it make sense from a legal perspective for Pam Bondi to simply say, you know, there are court orders surrounding some of these documents, and, you know, we've released everything that we can, but there are still ongoing investigations and other things that that prevent the release of some of it? Because that's where I see the problem, is that there, it may not be that she has the authority to release it, because, you know, yeah, she's the United States Attorney General, but she can't violate a court order if there is documents under seal, or if there's a court order preventing that while there's still investigations and potential indictments coming down the road. I mean, who knows, right? But there are definitely court orders surrounding this. Wouldn't that be appropriate to at least just say that much?
Wouldn't be illegal. And Jenna, you've been in this business for a very long time. You know a thing or two about advising people on PR, and I hope the Attorney General is listening right now, because you just put out some really good advice. The answer is yes, that would be a smart thing to do. I mean, also, we're talking about investigations that involve minors, right? So when you get investigations involving minors, and you're going back 15, 20 years with court documents, it's complicated. It takes a lot of sifting through. You know, I want transparency. I want the FBI to get fixed. I want the FBI to have a good reputation, if that's possible, after the last 10 years. But we need to be patient. And I think people who are out there calling for Pam Bondi's head, and you know, and the media trying to use this as a way to attack the administration. Of course, they're going to do that. Those of us who support the administration, and I think even within that, Dan Bongino and Pam Bondi, let's make sure that we are being wise and judicious in how we approach this, both from a PR perspective, but also in making decisions, legal decisions.
Yeah, well said. And, you know, the PR is one thing, and I get everyone's, you know, demand for transparency, but transparency should not come at the expense of justice. And there may be some of those parameters, and I would simply like to see the AG be at least transparent insofar as the justice is concerned and what is on the table versus not. And, you know, this whole thing, I think, could have been handled differently. But if there is a FOIA request, we see these text messages, it's going to be interesting. So we got to take a break here. But Mike Donnelly, really appreciate your time. And listeners can follow him on X at Donnelly Speaks. And we have him on the program often. And we're going to continue to talk about this from a political perspective, because this is the number one story right now. And unfortunately, so I don't think that it should be. And if it had been handled correctly, and if Trump would not just be so Trump and just say, you know, I leave this to my attorney general and go about his own business of the presidency, that would help a lot. But, you know, here we are. And so how do we handle this? Is this really that big of a deal? Is it, or are we minimizing it too much? Well, we're going to get some perspective from another guest and we come right back here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Together, you and I have much to celebrate. Last year, because of your caring help, Preborn rescued over 67,000 babies from abortion. Hi, I'm Dan Steiner, president of Preborn, and I want to thank you for your partnership. Think about what you did. 67,000 little babies are taking their first breath now because of your caring help. Your $28 sponsored one ultrasound that was given to one woman as she was deciding about the future of her baby. Once she saw her precious baby for the first time and heard their sweet baby's heartbeat, the chance of that child living doubled. And Preborn's mission is not only to rescue babies' lives, but also to lead women to Jesus Christ. Last year, we saw 8,900 women receive Christ as Savior. Your help is crucial to continue our life-saving work.
Your caring, tax-deductible gift saves lives. To learn more or donate, visit preborn.com/AFR or dial #250 and say the keyword baby.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And we're continuing to talk about this whole Epstein problem. And doesn't this feel like, you know, 3 years ago and 5 years ago and 10 years ago? I mean, this is kind of the story that just simply will not go away. And part of that is because of the lack of transparency. And I think that it is fair for the American people and also for Trump's base to demand that he fulfill what he promised and also what specifically his attorney general promised, Pam Bondi. Now, I know Pam well. I like her personally. And I personally think that the way that she has handled this whole situation in terms of PR has been a disaster. And that's unfortunate. Because that is completely overshadowing the other things that she's doing well as attorney general. But to and here's how I see it. So she went out very early when she was nominated and then confirmed as attorney general. She went out very early on Fox News saying the files are on my desk, you know, promising the American people you're going to have this, you know, giant release. You're going to get answers. And then about, you know, 2 months ago or so, there were all of those influencers that were invited to the White House into this sort of very bizarre photo op. And they had these binders. It's now known as Bindergate on X. And they held them up for photo op saying, you know, first edition of the release of the Epstein files. And all of those guys have now kind of walked that back because they played into it knowingly or not. You know, who knows? But, you know, they held those up and said, you know, there's going to be shocking, you know, massive release. That was literally nothing because everything in that was had already been released to the public. But this has been sort of this rollout of telling the American people and especially the MAGA base that you're going to get answers. You're going to get more than what is already in the public domain. And now all of a sudden, oh, hey, sorry, you know, we're just not going to do anything. And then Trump gets involved and is like, hey, yeah, we're not going to do anything. And so rightly, I think people are asking questions. And then rightly, people like Dan Bongino and Kash Patel are saying, well, wait a minute, this is not the appropriate way to handle things. And so now we're at this giant problem in the media because, in my opinion, Pam Bondi went and promised something that she's now not delivering on. And my question is, why in the world, when you are appointed as the Attorney General, the United States Attorney General, would you go on Fox News and make this promise literally, I don't even know if it was a week into her tenure. I mean, get your feet wet a little bit. Figure out what's actually going on. Figure out what you can. Figure out the implications. I mean, this is, as an attorney, I think she should have known better. But, you know, here we are. So let's welcome in John Cardillo, who is a GOP strategist, former NYPD, also frequent guest on the program. And, you know, John, you and I have talked a lot about this, you know, offline, because we have conversations as friends about, you know, political ongoings and news of the day. And, you know, so what do you make of this? I mean, to me, this all boils down to Pam just was inexplicably too eager to go on the news and promise something that now clearly she has no intention of delivering on. And that's just inexplicable to me.
Yeah, I mean, Janet, you and I are of like mind. I know Pam a long time. A like, nice person, always super pleasant to be around. And this was a comms disaster. I mean, this was like cataclysmic. I don't remember DOJ handling something this poorly. You know, like you say, so she's sitting with John Roberts from Fox, and he asks her about the client. See, this is the nuance, right? Everybody's upset about the quote-unquote client list. So John Roberts asked her about the client list and specifically. Pam never addressed the list specifically, but she said it's not the files on my desk. When he used the words client list, she said, it's on my desk, and I'm reviewing or reading through or however she phrased that. But anyone listening to that who speaks common American English would have thought she was talking about the list being on her desk. I did. And then they come out and say, well, that's it. There's nothing. I don't think Trump made it any better when Bondi was sitting with him and Rubio, and the reporter asked about it, about this whole debacle. You know, let's not even get into Bindergate. And I blame those influencers, many of whom were friends of mine. Because, okay, if they didn't read what was in the binder when it was handed to them and they were rushed to a photo op, great. But you and I both know, they after they read it, they promoted that stunt on social media for weeks. It was only when people started to get frustrated did they backpedal. And then you've got that DOJ memo that gets leaked to Axios saying the case is over. And then going back to what I was saying, Trump cutting off Bondi when she went to speak. Now, Pam messed that one up as well, because you know this, Jenny. You were Trump's attorney for a while. You let the boss speak first. When a question is asked, everybody else should remain silent until the principal decides whether or not they're going to field the question or they hand
100%.
It to you. And Pam jumped the gun on that one, and Trump shutting her down made it even worse. So I think it's been a comms disaster from the White House to DOJ on down. And I feel bad for Bongino and Patel, because I speak to Dan often. They're doing some really good work that they just can't yet publicize out of HR and legal reasons. And they're doing some very good work inside the Bureau. So it was unfair that this fell on them.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. And to highlight that whenever you work for a principal, whether it's as an attorney, whether it's as a spokesperson, a press secretary, an advisor, I mean, any capacity, you never get ahead of your principal. I mean, and this is why, for listeners, you know, when you often hear the White House officials saying, well, I'm not going to get ahead of the president on that, it means literally, like, that's not something that he has talked about openly, so I'm not going to speak for him on that. And there are really good reasons for that, because you are speaking on their behalf, and you have to respect that. And so for Pam to go out and do this, I mean, she's a seasoned lawyer. I mean, she's not new to this whole game.
Right.
that to me just, it doesn't make sense why she would do that and why the whole Bindergate, you know, thing. I mean, my perspective on that was maybe that wasn't even her, that was something, I mean, and at the time I said this on this program, that it may have been someone in the White House that was trying to undermine her and basically just took some of her PR, made these binders, you know, told her about it. And she was, you know, unfortunately, maybe naive enough to sort of play along. And then it completely blew up. But none of that makes sense with her other track record. So what do we make of it?
Yeah, I mean, she was a trial lawyer. She was a prosecutor, a litigator. She was Attorney General of Florida for 8 years. She was a regular guest on Fox, and me, so she was a fixture. The woman understands communication. So like you, I'm baffled. I am absolutely baffled by this, because when Pam was Attorney General of Florida, it was right in the middle of the opioid crisis. The pill mills in Florida were out of control, and she was doing pressers daily, and her messaging was precise. It was spot on. They did a great job. They made tremendous dents in that industry and prosecuted a lot of people who should have been here in Florida. So she's no stranger to high-stakes political comms. The entire thing is very, very weird to me. Why they got in front of this and then shutting it down abruptly. Now, do I think that it's going to affect the midterms? Because you got a fringe on social media. No, I don't think most Americans are going to vote on Jeffrey Epstein come November 2026, right? They care about price of gas and groceries, taxes, health insurance, and where their kids are going to school. Jeffrey Epstein doesn't affect their daily life in any way, shape, or form. But people are upset, and this is overshadowing things administration and DOJ need to do. And what's surprising to me is Trump is a marketing genius, right? I criticize him when he makes bad moves. The man is a marketing genius. He understands how to use multimedia better than anybody. It's surprising me the White House comm shop hasn't tried to clean this up. They're both making it worse by the day. So that's the part that confuses me as well.
Yeah, and I think you're right on in a number of respects in what you just said, John Cardillo, which is that, you know, for the average person listening to this, and it may even be that a lot of our listeners today are going, okay, so this is kind of a PR, I mean, a disaster, fine, what do I care? I mean, fake news media has been anti-Trump for a long time, we get it. This doesn't matter, I'm tired of hearing about Jeffrey Epstein, who cares, right? So, now they're coming to arrest you, John, for, you know, talking to me about this. But there's a siren in the background. But totally kidding. But, you know, is this really just about PR that we can say, OK, this was poorly handled? But at the end of the day, who cares? Right. And we can still move forward with this. Or is there something potentially more on the merits, bigger, when you have the Justice Department and the FBI concluding they have no evidence? And then this memo concluded they have no evidence that Epstein blackmailed powerful figures, kept a client list, or even was murdered. And this goes totally against what the going and prevailing narrative had been. And so I have seen other very interested and powerful people in Washington, you know, basically saying this could potentially end for Trump like Nixon. I mean, that's how far they're going, and that there are a lot of people who are on Trump's side that are very nervous about this on the merits of it. So is this more than just a PR disaster?
Oh, I think it is, because here's the thing, right? What you just read is critical. And listen to how it was phrased, right? No evidence of a political blackmail operation or an intelligence operation, which I don't believe. No evidence of a client list. Okay, there may not be a little black book, right? It could have been Epstein's phone, and in his mind, he knew which people had which proclivities, if they were pedophiles, if they were into some other weird stuff. So, okay, I'll buy that there's not a little black book in writing somewhere. You know, I mean, you know your friends, and you know if they like red wine or whiskey. So that one I'll buy. Notice what they didn't say. They didn't say there's no evidence of children being abused. There's no evidence of women being trafficked. Because I knew and know, haven't spoken to him in a bit, Brad Edwards, who was the premier victims' rights lawyer. He handled more of the cases than anybody down here in South Florida, real good guy, and he was a former Broward County prosecutor. And at the time, this is going way back, I mean, 07-ish, I had drinks with Brad and another friend of mine he had gone to law school with, and an FBI agent from the case popped by. And the way they had mountains of evidence on trafficking of children and otherwise. So it is horrible for the administration that this case was buried in 2005. Then the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of Florida, Acosta, who buried the case, is Trump's labor secretary, right? Or it was labor secretary in Trump's first term. And they let the county of Palm Beach, the state of Florida, prosecute on one minor charge when they could have indicted on hundreds of counts federally. So the case has been a mystery since 05, which is why, and I'm getting flamed for it, I keep saying, I don't know why people think something's going to give. Trump had all this information in his first term. He never moved on it. So clearly there are people involved in this who are too big to fail, who are too powerful to take down. I mean, that's really the only logic. And I don't know if you saw this, but a former Israeli, Naftali Bennett, he was PM for a little bit, issued a blatant statement on Twitter. It was not a Mossad op intelligence. Now, believe that or not, I don't know, but you've got some very prominent press. It's not going to go away.
Yeah, and let's take a break here because we're losing John just a little bit, so we'll try to reconnect with him and get a better connection. But, you know, this is important because on the other side of this break as well, John, I want to ask you about, you know, what other individuals who are close to this case and actually do have direct knowledge, like Epstein's former lawyer, Alan Dershowitz, who's coming out saying now, I know for a fact, and this is a quote, I know for a fact Epstein documents are being suppressed and they're being suppressed to protect individuals. I know the names of the individuals. I know why they're being suppressed. I know who's suppressing them, but I'm bound by confidentiality from a judge in cases and I can't disclose what I know, unquote. So that would seem like maybe somebody else is running Washington. I mean, are there things that we should know? So we're going to have John Cardillo back on the flip side of this break to talk more about the merit, why this is actually a bigger deal, I think, than just a PR disaster. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and I'm joined by my special guest, John Cardillo, former NYPD and a GOP strategist, and just all around great guy who's been around this game for a really long time, and so has some very good perspective on this whole Epstein debacle. And we've been talking about this for the last segment, and we're continuing because is this just all about PR? Is there more to the merit of this? Could this actually affect Trump's presidency? Is there something that is being covered up, which is basically what a huge segment of the MAGA base is now alleging? And that was kind of verified, I think, by Harvard Law Professor Emeritus Alan Dershowitz, who represented Epstein, when he went on a program with former White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer and said this: I know for a fact Epstein documents are being suppressed and they're being suppressed to protect individuals. I know the names of the individuals. I know where they're being suppressed. I know who's suppressing them, but I'm bound by confidentiality from a judge and cases, and I can't disclose what I know. But hand to God, I know the names of people whose files are being suppressed in order to protect them, and that's wrong. Spicer asks, just out of curiosity, without the names, are these politicians, business leaders? Dershowitz interrupts and says, both, everything. So, John, you know, this raises like a lot more red flags. And I mean, I know Alan Dershowitz personally. I worked with him on the first the impeachment team, the first Trump impeachment. And, you know, we were both lawyers on Trump's legal team at that point. I've had him on the show multiple times. I mean, he's not a guy that would just embellish to get media or publicity. He doesn't need it. So this to me is a really disturbing comment that after the memo was released, now we have this. And I think that Bongino's reaction here of going, wait a minute, now it's me or Pam. This is not okay. How the memo was phrased, this is not the transparency that we promised the American people. I think Dan is possibly the only one out of all of this that is not just looking at the political pros and cons, but just simply saying, hey, let's do what's right.
Well, yeah, 100%. I mean, look, Dan is another one who understands messaging. He's an old friend of mine. I've got tremendous respect for the guy, and I trust him. Dan is also a cop. He was a street cop in Brooklyn, in one of the worst areas, went to the Secret Service, wound up on the presidential protective detail. He understands how this stuff is supposed to work, but he's also about putting handcuffs on bad guys. So I don't know. I haven't spoken to him on this exactly, his sentiment, but what I can tell you is, knowing the mentality, having worked in the same place, and, you know, everybody in that world thinks similarly, I'll speculate and comfortably speculate that Dan is probably upset that bad guys walked, and bad guys who did some pretty egregious things, and who could blame them?
Yeah, and so what do we make of this comment from Alan Dershowitz in light of everything else that's going on? And, I mean, why wouldn't Pam Bondi kind of have the same statement to the media of saying, you know, listen, I wish we could be more transparent, but there are judges involved, ongoing investigations. I mean, that would have seemed to be a little bit more a better way to go.
100%. I mean, I said for weeks now, Pam should have said, the longstanding tradition, DOJ and FBI don't comment on ongoing matters. You know, this she could have gone a step further. There's a lot of material in this case. It's being thoroughly reviewed. And, you know, we'll get back to you. And that would have been enough. That would have been fine. Her statement about the list was one, but that binder stunt was so ridiculous. Big red letters, Epstein files, phase one, you know, and in these three-ring binders. I mean, it was the entire thing was preposterous and turned a very serious matter into a clown show. And so I think, you know, we're dealing with so many problems here. I don't know. They don't put the genie back in the bottle, and I don't know how they're going to now stem the leaks in this dam, because it's like every day there's a new comms mistake. But to Dershowitz's point, Jenna, I 100% believe him. I 100% believe that there are massive names on this, in these case files, who are too big to fall, that it would devastate the economy and it could rock Washington, and the swamp is protecting its own.
Which is what we've heard for a really long time, and exactly why I think the base elected President Trump twice, that we could drain the swamp and all of those other things, which is why it makes sense that the MAGA base is so frustrated. And you have people who have been 100% like the most MAGA of MAGA that are now upset about this and even calling out President Trump directly, which I find really surprising that this would be the issue. But I think it's not just about Jeffrey Epstein. It's not just about this particular case. It goes to the heart of the protection of the corruption, the lack of transparency, the not draining the swamp. I think that is actually the issue here. It's not that, like, oh, why are we, you know, talking about the Epstein files again? Like, who cares? It's more about, well, if you can't even get this right when it's over this kind of obvious stuff, then how are we going to trust that the DOJ currently under Trump is going to drain the swamp? And so, to your point, how does the administration, and specifically Bondi, how does she roll it back? Because if Trump is, and he's behind her so far, I mean, he's come out supporting her. Now Bongino's saying basically it's me or Pam, which is kind of an ultimatum. But my concern is, okay, let's say that Trump fires her. Well, that would only serve the purpose of setting up the expectation that whoever is the acting AG replacement is going to do what she was unwilling to do in terms of the files, which we know isn't going to happen. So I think that's why he's keeping her, because why would he fire her just to set up another false expectation, right? So where do we go from here?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, or he asked for her resignation and says she misspoke. There were never any files. She put, you know, he does what Trump does. Pam didn't read what was on her desk and realized it was released. You know, there's nothing else. I accepted a resignation. And people aren't going to buy it. People are not going to buy it. The damage is done. People aren't going to buy it. So if he keeps her, he gets accused of a cover-up. If he gets rid of her and says there are no files, he gets accused of a cover-up. She did a lot of damage. And look, Pam was a partner at Ballard. She was making big money. She was on the government affairs space, so she was lobbying D.C. She was friendly with both sides of the aisle. I don't think, as AG, I mean, she's been on the right side of a couple of issues with regards to civil lawsuits and memos, but I don't think she's ever going to rock any boats in D.C. by anybody in D.C. having a reckoning about anything. because she needs to go back out there and make big money afterward, and you can't prosecute the hand that feeds.
Which is the whole frustration, I think, of the whole MAGA movement. But you use the word cover up a couple of times, John, and that's where this whole analogy toward, you know, this is going to end like Nixon, I think, comes into play. Because what would be the circumstances potentially that if there's an investigation and there was actually a cover up? I mean, Trump's under no obligation really to release anything other than his own campaign promise, right? And the expectation of the MAGA base. So is there, do you think that that's a fair equation? And for some people, like our friend Jack Maxey, for example, who is out there saying, you know, this is going to end like Nixon. I mean, is that a little too hyperbolic, or do you see some potential apt comparisons?
Yeah, Jack and I normally agree. And this is one of the few times he and I are sparring a little bit. No, I don't think this is a Nixon type situation. I mean, that was something else entirely. This is a president exercising the power of the presidency and choosing to classify files, documents, information, intelligence. I mean, it's well within his purview and his constitutional authority to do that. He's the OCA, right? He's the original classification authority. And so the president can choose to you know, release or hold back anything he wants. It's not impeachable. It's not that scandalous. And how do you really blame Trump when they had all this information since 2005? Bush didn't release it. Obama didn't release it. Trump didn't release it. Biden didn't release it. And Trump didn't release it again. So you also have to go after Obama and Bush 43. And, you know, they would be as culpable as well and be stained by history. And look, they are the biggest establishment guys to ever exist. The media and the establishment is never going to let that happen to their legacies. And so I think people just need to resign themselves to the fact that they've gotten as much as they're going to get. And they keep beating me up on social media. I don't like it. It's as frustrating as anything, but you haven't seen it in 20 years. Trump didn't release it in his first term. You know, I don't know why people think they're going to get it now.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is, of course, the other obvious question is, okay, this wasn't released during Trump's first term. Then Biden, of course, didn't do anything. And I think it's totally laughable that now the Democrats are suddenly, you know, all up in consternation and going, oh, well, Trump is, you know, hiding something. It's like, well, where were you? Show me your posts on social media. Show me your media hits where you were calling for Biden to release anything over 4 years. That's totally laughable. But now I think, again, we're in this situation just because Pam went out and made this promise that was too quick to and too early. But this does have a potential, you know, kind of a blowback. And so where are we at then with Bongino versus Pam? I mean, where does this ultimatum end? Because I don't want to see Dan having to artificially and prematurely cut off the great work that he's doing. But I get his point and why it's an ultimatum. And where, how does that end?
Well, you know, look, I mean, it'll be a greater loss to America losing Bongino at the Bureau than Bondi at DOJ, because Dan is doing some real work inside and he's passionate about it. I think Pam is more about the media component of her job. And she, you know, look, Jenna, this was a really big screw up. And in any other administration, she wouldn't have survived this. I mean, you know that from a comms perspective, getting in front of the president, making a mess, that stunt that just looked cheap and low rent for the White House with the binders. She wouldn't have survived this. If it was Obama or Bush or anybody else, can you imagine her reporting to a Dick Cheney and pulling this and surviving the day in career terms? It wouldn't have happened. And so, you know, we lose a lot more by losing Dan than we do by losing Pam. I'll answer it that way.
Yeah, yeah. And Mark Mitchell, who is the CEO of Rasmussen Reports, posted on X, "Everyone important I know is freaking out right now." And in a response to some of the things, he's saying, "We're bombing credibility, mostly important polling people who measure the outcomes of elections. And so will this have an impact on the midterms? I think it depends on how quickly this is resolved." You know, as you said, John, I don't think people are going to go and vote on this issue because it's Epstein, but I do think that they're going to vote on credibility, transparency, and whether or not they believe that the Trump administration is going to consistently fill promises, and Congress as well. And so how is this going to affect the midterms? That really becomes the question, I think, for the Trump administration. So we're already out of time. We could have talked about this a lot more, but John Cardillo, really appreciate it. You can follow him on X as well. And as always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.